Americans have started buying again, thanks in part to the holiday season, but it's not just about gift purchases. Here's two numbers for you. First, U.S. consumer borrowing rose in December. That's the third consecutive month that's happened. And second number, revolving debt, and that includes credit cards, rose $2.3 billion in December. That's the first gain in revolving debt since August of 2008. Louise Story is with us. She's the Wall Street and Finance reporter for our partner, the New York Times. And Louise, you can explain why the revolving debt figure is actually the more significant news, right?
Good morning. Yes, you know, people are taking out their plastic again. This is, you know, when people are really cautious, they spend only cash, or what they do is they swipe with their debit cards, because in the last couple of years, a lot of people have been saying, I want to live within my means. And so I don't want to swipe with a credit card, because what if I don't meet the payment? And debt got a really bad name because of all of the excesses going into the crisis. And so people weren't paying with credit cards as much. But for the first time since August 08, in December, we saw people take out the plastic. And this figure that went up 3.5% in December, what it represents is not outstanding debt. It represents revolving debt, debt that, you know, you pay on credit cards, but you may pay off at the end of the month. And that just shows a little bit more confidence in the economy. It's very important, given that consumers make up about 70% of the economy in their spending.
All right. So it's good news in terms of the recovering economy, but you have to be a little cautious about it since, I mean, debt overload is kind of what got us into this predicament, is it not?
That's right. And, you know, the overall debt figure also went up in December. It's gone up for a few months. It's not back nearly to where it was before the crisis. It'll be interesting to see if it reaches that point. It has, you know, several hundreds of billion to go to get there. But it's climbing. And so the question all along has been, are consumers being really good? Are they reducing their debt load, or are banks not lending to them anymore?
Right, exactly.
And because, you know, sometimes good behavior is forced behavior. So as banks loosen up and start lending more and more in the future, the question will be, have we all learned our lesson? Are we being more careful?
Well, and also there's the savings rate.
Right.
Which is an indication of sort of financial sort of wherewithal.
Right. And that's been going up during the crisis. But again, it's going to be, you know, over the next year or two as banks loosen, we'll have to watch.
Well, MasterCard reported a pretty big jump in their fourth quarter profits, over 40%. My question for you is that because of this revolving debt number, or is that because they're working their way around the regulations that were put in place for credit card companies?
It's going to be mostly from this figure, because just all those swipes really add up for MasterCard. They do make money from late fees. They charge you if you're late, but they also make just a lot of money for every swipe that you make, because, you know, all those retailers pay them a fee. So that's going to be a lot of it. But of course, the credit card bill is one credit card companies are looking to get around. There are analyst reports out. I was reading one this morning. Actually, it was talking about how it might cost like $25 billion to the industry. That's some of these new rules. So they are aggressively looking at how to save themselves a bit of impact from that law.
So what's the magic number, Louise? What's the magic balance between our savings rate and our debt rate where the alarm bells might go off? I mean, is there a healthy balance that we know where, you know, suddenly a red alarm will flash, or the Batman phone will ring because we're getting close to an economic collapse again?
You know, you might think that Ben Bernanke, the head of the Fed, had this magic number, but the truth is it's a little unknown. It's kind of like, you know, what's your magic number on how, you know, how much protein you eat versus vegetables? It's people can debate that all day. And so people have to find their own comfort level and be careful. The other thing going on here is the magic level for individuals may be different than for our economy. And there are a lot of questions on, does our economy just rely on more consumer spending than we really have to spend? I mean, is it relying on people using their plastic so much to bring the economy back that it's a little dangerous for individuals? And that's a big question. So, you know, Obama has been out there asking businesses to spend. And if companies spent more, perhaps we wouldn't be quite as reliant on consumers.
And if 70% of commerce is plastic debt at 18% interest rate or something like that, that's a huge load.
70% is consumer spending.
Right.
Now, of course,
spending.
Consumers don't spend only on credit,
right.
But they
right.
do a lot of it. So, you know, that is a lot of our economy.
All right. Well, your entire career is educating people in terms of financial literacy, right? I mean, wouldn't you say that, Louise?
That's the goal.
All right. Well, one of the things we're asking people is because they have this test coming up, and that, you know, the global test where they test kids worldwide to compare nations. Now they're going to be testing them about financial literacy. Do you think Americans are financially literate?
You know, I think financial literacy has improved a lot in the last few years. I mean, people know a lot more about what goes on in banking and finance than they did, and the interest is greater, but there's a long way to go.
Well, we kind of botched things in the financial meltdown. I mean, if that was a test, we didn't do terribly well, which has some people in our listening audience getting their kids to think like Louise Story, or even our pal Beth Kobliner, who's going to be here a little bit later talking about financial literacy, teaching them at an earlier age than ever.
My name is Tamara. I'm from Baltimore. I think that second grade and third grade is a good time to begin teaching children about money, because that's the time where they start to really understand that their parents work and use that money to spend to buy things for them. However, if they show interest at an earlier age, as in my son, who expressed interest as early as 4 years old, it's never too early to start to train them.
And Denise in Lions Head Lake, New Jersey, is a listener who gets our texts and replied to our call out this way. My 7-year-old gets $10 per week allowance that we agreed to divide between spending, saving, and sharing. If he wants something, he buys it himself. We'd be paying for it anyway. This way, he just makes the decision himself. The money in the savings account is there for the sake of saving. We're trying to teach him about electronic payments and that it's real money to use a credit or debit card. A Detroit listener asks, what would financial literacy mean? That's really what we're going to be discussing later on this hour. Don't spend more than you can afford. That's a start. Don't gamble, or how to do these things, and then how to declare bankruptcy. Knowing your options, I guess, that's the way to keep the conversation going. If you want to get texts from us with the questions like that, send START to 69866. Normal texting rates apply. Or just reach us the old-fashioned way, 877-8-MY-TAKE, 877-869-8253. More on teaching financial literacy with Beth Kobliner in a half hour. Louise, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
The Takeaway is supported by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live a healthy, productive life. Information at gatesfoundation.org.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.